Hi, and welcome to the Just Riding Along Show.
Hello, and welcome to the Just Riding Along. I don't know what I'm doing.
Matt forgot how to start a podcast again.
Hey, this is episode 234. Tonight's show is brought to you by a call with your pants around your ankles. Yeah.
Your pants?
Your pants. You got your pants around your ankles. Wiping your ass with a corn cob because toilet paper don't exist yet. You ran out of the Sears Roebuck catalog. Sears Roebuck catalog used to come with a hole punched in it so you could hang it on a nail.
All right.
Straight up true shit.
And is that so you could put it by your toilet and rip off pages to wipe your ass?
Yes.
I can't imagine that magazine
shit.
Page would be very comfortable.
It was not. It used to not be magazine. It used to be a like newspaper black and white print. And it did not have a sheen, and it was very soft for a paper like that. And when toilet paper was released, it was so taboo that I can't remember if it was Scott or Charmin actually sold toilet paper without putting their name on it because they didn't want to be associated with it because it was so taboo. And then at some point,
do you know so much shit about
toilet paper became more like accepted. One of the late night show guys was like, there's a shortage on toilet paper as a joke. And then it actually caused a shortage because people panic bought it. And for those of you that are like, wow, how does Matt know so many things like the mystery of paradoxical undressing during hypothermia? I listen to podcasts and I just remember this cursory flyover.
Was that on like the Joe Rogan podcast at some point?
I've never listened to the podcast and I want to flip over this table right. I'm going to turn those awful lights back on.
Don't do that.
I will tie you to a chair and turn those lights
on.
So,
Matt, what year was toilet paper invented?
I don't remember. I feel like
you
it
have
was
a decade.
I feel like it was post-war war, but I don't remember which one. Because invention versus mainstream is much different.
True.
But gonna tell you what I've been doing. And
it was marketed as therapeutic paper.
Yep.
1857.
Oh, I was wrong. But when did it become mainstream?
Earlier forms.
Can we just
date back to 6th century China? So China kicked our ass again. They're first to make a lot of
shit. If you invented paper, it's not going to take you long to be like, hey, I'm going to wipe my butt with this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I think toilet paper and indoor plumbing kind of came together.
It used to come in flat sheets. Yeah. Like it'd come in a printer paper stack. And then they realized that we should put it into a roll. So that happened in like 1870 to 1890. And we didn't figure out how to get splinters out of it until 1935, though, it looks like.
Matt, do you want to tell us what you've been doing?
I've never gotten a splinter to the asshole. That would be...
We can fix that.
That would be a wake up.
I got a splinter today, but it was in my right ring finger. So what I've been doing, did we talk about truck stuff?
Yeah, because we recorded on Sunday.
That's right. So let's see.
Well, you talked about like buying your truck. Did you like do something with your truck?
Well, you just weren't here, but yeah, I put shocks and taillights on it.
On the new one?
Yeah.
Oh, damn. I didn't realize you already like were putting stuff in it.
Well, I mean, sometimes you test drive a truck and you're like, this is everything I want, but it needs shocks. So you're a big boy and you buy it and you buy shocks and you put them on.
You already said it, so people are going to be bummed, but which ones did you put on?
Bilstein 4600s, which is a direct replacement.
Those are popular ones.
And if anyone reaches out to me and is like, you should have put 5100s on there, shut your fucking
mouth. I mean, those make the 4100s look like pieces of shit.
Do you know the difference between a 46 and a 51, Kenny?
I thought there was a 4100, isn't there?
I did 4600.
I know, that's what I'm saying. You're 4600.
I don't know what 4100s are because I've never put them on anything.
Maybe they don't exist. I knew there was like a couple different series of Bilstein, so I'm making it up a little bit.
The only thing a 5100 does is it supports a 2-inch lift. You can run 0 to 2 inches of lift.
That's what I put on my truck, isn't it?
No, you put leveling coilovers.
Does it have a dingle dongle reservoir?
No.
Maybe next time.
No, I don't need a lift. I don't need a reservoir. I just need it to not body roll like a bitch when I drive it down the highway.
And make creaky noises.
Yeah. So, let's see. I got in a good ride this week. Short rip with some dudes from work, but Kona Hey is a fucking good one. That bike is good. So, the first time I rode it, I was like, yeah, whatever. And I thought it was slow. And then I rode it again. And I got smarter and realized it's not slow. It's just not trying to kill me. and it feels slow because it's not trying to kill me, and that bike fucking parties. So if you're out there and you're like, I'm on the fence about buying a Kona Heihei G10 Carbon, do it. It's pretty good. And that's that. Other news from me is, this is going to be a plug for work, but if you want an Esker Heyduke tie, extra large, it's got XT shifting, SRAM brakes, and 350 hubs laced to Stans rims. If you want one of those, I have one in stock. I will ship it anywhere in the contiguous U.S. at no charge. You will pay from a PayPal payment link, which offers great protection for me as a seller and you as a buyer. Credit card by phone is not accepted. It will ship within 2 to 3 business days of being ordered. We ordered one for a customer. They don't need it anymore. So if you want one with no line, no weight, call Subculture Cyclery and be like, yo, Matt said you got a tie Heyduke in XL. Send me a payment link. And when I'm back at work on Monday, I'll put that, or this comes out on Monday, so I'll put that bitch in a box and I will ship it to you. So if you live in Alaska or Hawaii, we'll charge you shipping. If you live outside of the U.S., tough shit. I'm not dealing with international shipping. I'm just not. So sorry.
Since we're doing plug stuff, if anyone's looking for a job, we have 6 locations. Hangar 15 Bicycles.
Hey, well, what if they were looking for a Gen 3 Levo battery?
We have Gen 3 Levo batteries. They will also fit Gen 2s. We have metric shit ton of them. We have We got 700 watt hour. They are brand new, just been pulled out of a bike, so they'll have one charge cycle. Sometimes it registers as 2, because if you top them off, because from the factory, even though they haven't ever been light charged all the way up, it shows 1 cycle. But anyway, they're new batteries. And yeah, we got 500 watt hour, 700 watt hour. They'll fit they're made for a Gen 3, like they've got all the Gen 3 hardware and rock guards and all that shit on them. But you can swap out 3 parts and make them a Gen 2, or if you already have a Gen 2 battery, you just take all the Gen 3 stuff off, you bolt your Gen 2 stuff on, and the core battery is the same. So yeah,
hot damn.
Got a bunch of them. So if you want one, give me a call, shoot me an email, shoot me a text, I don't care, whatever.
Full face Kenny at
That's not an email address. Anyway, but if you're looking for a job, in all seriousness, we're always looking for people for every position, really. Sales, service, especially if you're an experienced mechanic who's not a grizzled piece of shit and will take some, take some constructive criticism and will do things the way that we do it, which is what we do for a high volume shop to keep people happy. If you want to be a curmudgeon-y piece of shit and fuck around with campy shifter springs in the corner and not talk to customers, this is not the place to work. Yeah. I'll probably be your boss. And we got 6 locations, jobs from sales to being a mechanic, especially if you're a mechanic, all the way up through a GM. So we got it all.
Approximately, what's the pay range for a good mechanic?
Minimum wage to $500,000 a year.
No. If you had experience, you would probably make, let's say you worked, you're a good mechanic, you know how to do most everything, you would probably make $20 to $25 an hour very easily, but it can go up from there if you're a baller. And if you're a GM, it's up from there.
All right. Cool.
All right. Sorry, I tanked your stuff. Keep going, Matt.
That's really all that I did. My Kona did come with mechanical shifting, and I don't know what to do with myself. I've never been so conflicted where I'm
GX?
Like, man, it is.
That stuff's great. I run GX mechanical on my e-bike. It's fantastic.
Well, this is GX trans, or it's 90.
You poor thing.
I mean, they don't do GX mechanical now. It's 90.
I know,
mechanical,
but it's
transmission, right?
Very, very sad.
I mean, but it works as long as you have it installed properly.
I've got some really sad SRAM shit to talk about, which we can get to in a minute. Like, I'm bummed out. Bummed the fuck out.
Okay. Well, I'm going to say something good about SRAM. I got to ride their mechanical dropper lever, which exists, and it's fucking great. So if you're a bike shop out there, and I'm going to find the exact name of it here.
Is it the Sherpa or something?
No, they don't name anything stupid like that. Oh, it's called the SRAM dropper lever. It retails for $45 fucking. It's MMX compatible. It's got three holes in it. It's got a barrel adjuster that doesn't stick out like a Red Rocket dog dick, like a Trans X or a P&W or a Loam lever, which all those look fucking stupid because even when I have the barrel adjuster threaded all the way in, the little plastic cover doesn't cover the entire thing. So the second I turn it a quarter turn to pull that little wiggle out of your dropper lever, it looks like the goddamn barrel adjuster is about to fall out and it looks like a piece of shit. This one doesn't do that. It has a nice spring for return. It has a very nice lever feel, and it's a plastic lever with some texture to it. It's just fucking, it slaps. And every bike shop should have those in stock.
Yeah, it's like the most affordable, but also like, I don't know, it's like, I don't want to say it's small. It's like compact, and it just fucking works.
And it does one thing, it does a bunch of things really well. One, it's under $50 retail. Number two, because here's the bad thing is like, oh yeah, I can sell you a $200 dropper lever. Oh, you want a lever that doesn't suck? How about a $75 wolf tooth lever?
That's, I mean, you can sell a $200 dropper post?
Yeah.
You said lever.
No, you can buy like, oh yeah, you want to put a new dropper? Like you want to get rid of a 12-year-old reverb that has been rebuilt 97 times? Like you got an old silver collar hydro post? Like, yeah, we're not rebuilding that again.
You know what, Shram?
It's time.
What are you guys doing? Why don't they make like a GX dropper?
Let's not worry about that just
all right,
yet.
So they're making a GX dropper. They fucking better make a goddamn GX dropper.
No,
put a damn cartridge in it.
I don't think so.
Just go get an old strut from a Hyundai Elantra, and you put that bitch inside of there, and it just works. And it's $200 to $300, and it says SRAM on it. And nobody would buy anything else ever again, and we wouldn't ever have to talk about droppers.
No, just hear me out, Kenny. So it's under $50. It matchmakers, which means that bin of 500 bar clamps you have in the shop, you can just put it on the bar with one of those, or you can put it on a matchmaker and replace that P&W one that's...
No, I think it's great. I think it's great. I just wish they made a damn dropper now that I think about it.
I'm not done. When you build up your new bike that has transmission 90 or 70 on it, and it's got one of these levers on it, guess what happens? The cables point in the same direction and in terms of like how they are in relation to the bar, like the angle of the dangle related to your bar. So it looks fucking tidy as hell. Did I mention it's under $50 and it's got a spring in it? It feels fucking great. Okay. Like just stock these, just buy them, sell them. And if you can't sell this, you should probably get one of those Will It Blend blenders, blend it up and blow it up your ass. Because if you can't sell this, you can't sell, like, I don't know how you even sell a tube.
I don't know. Maybe some shops, all their customers want are fucking matching anodized parts.
That's fine. You save this for the poor people that happen to find your shop.
You know what? I'm on the SRAM thing. We're going to go for this. I just slammed an Izzy vodka and I am riled up.
Oh, God.
So SRAM's done a bunch of good stuff over the years. They continue to do really good stuff. One of their best products that they've ever made is GX. GX mechanical 12-speed, probably the best thing to happen to the entire bike industry in an extremely long time, in my opinion. And they fucking discontinued it. So they'll, you know, a guide brake, the worst goddamn thing that's ever been put upon the bike industry, they'll try and milk that bitch out for a long time and then realize, all right, that's bad. Everyone fucking hates us. They hate these brakes. We need to change the name. But GX, one of the best things they've ever made, somebody with a big brain over there said, fuck, we got some good ass shit going. Let's change the name. What the fuck are you guys doing? GX Eagle Chains, discontinued. X01 Eagle Chains, discontinued. What the fuck are you guys doing? That's all. So hopefully someone can correct me from within SRAM. But from what I see on my side, you're doing some dumbass naming shit. So one of the best things you've ever done in a name that you've grown that costs $1 gajillion. Like companies would pay so much money to have a name that people recognize and that's respected. And then you just ruin it and take it away. And now you want to call it S200. What the fuck are you doing? So that's all I got. Thoughts?
Shit's old.
Sure.
But it was so good.
Sure. Why don't you?
It still exists.
Well, I know it exists. I'm just pissed off because I was trying to buy chains today. And I'm like, why are there fuck are there no X01 chains? We sell more X01 chains than any bike shop on the entire planet because we upsell people on them because they're so goddamn good. We're like, yo, Johnny, GX stuff's really good, right?
Wait, you're selling my dad a chain?
Yeah. And Johnny's like, yeah, I love GX. And we're like, awesome. What if we sell you a chain that's not quite twice the money and it lasts twice as long and you don't have to pay attention to your bike as much and you won't stretch your shit out and ruin your drivetrain? And Johnny's like, fuck yeah. And we sell him a $75 chain. Everyone's happy. That goddamn chain is gone now. Poof.
I mean, Johnny would be like, it'd be rude not to.
Poof. Gone. So now I can't sell Johnny an XO1 chain. I got to sell him a chain that doesn't match the shit he's got. But like, well, I got this S200 chain. So I can sell him an S200, which is a GX, for $40. Or I can sell him an S300 chain, which is $100. And it comes in rainbow or gold. And that's it. So a nice silver XO1 chain that was as good as an XX1 chain for $25 or whatever dollars less doesn't exist anymore. So what the fuck? Who moved my goddamn cheese?
I don't know, man. I mean, here's the thing, though. Like, where do you draw the line? Because for me, when I heard this news, I understand that XO1 chains are good. But also, like, I don't know. I'm going to sound like I'm drinking the SRAM Kool-Aid right now, but, like, they can't make 5,000 different fucking chains. So,
well, they're literally making more chains than they had before. That's my problem.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are. They had an NX and a GX and an XO. Hey, if you want to discontinue, like, the fucking copper XX1 chain or something, okay, great. I don't give a shit about that. But they had a great thing going that everybody understood, and UPCs and all the bike shops have min-maxes set. Everything is great. And they basically have, from what I can understand, the same chain. But they've taken the XO1 away, which was great. And now they're still – basically, they've added more SKUs to the world of bike shops. And they've added an S100 and an S200 and an S300. And now everyone's got to figure all that shit out. So they've made more shit and made my life more complicated.
No, I understand this is the Izzy Vodka talking, but like, you just import the S100 and you use your NX numbers for it.
Yeah, but why change it? They literally had a recognizable good thing. It'd be like Honda saying, yeah, people really like the Accord. Everyone knows exactly what it is. We sell a bajillion of it. We're going to call it the Bucka Fucka Shitta. Like,
no,
what
they didn't.
The fuck?
Kenny, they still make GX. It's just not the fucking GX that you're talking about.
I don't like it.
It actually makes way more sense to have XX1, XO1, GX, 90, 70, 500, 300, 200, 100.
But it doesn't make any goddamn sense. They got 90 mechanical. What the fuck does that mean? They make a 70 mechanical. What the fuck does that mean? And now we have S-series stuff, S100, S200, S300. What the fuck does that mean?
The only thing that I would add to this is I understand the reasoning. It would have been cool if maybe the numbers, because like in some ways 300 sounds better than 90, but if it's two digits, it's compatible with transmission. If it's three digits, it's Eagle. Like, I don't know. Like, out of all the shit I have to worry about, this is something that I give two shits.
I don't know. I think they've done fucked up. Someone needs to, if they're going to like make their entire range make sense and like get rid of XX1 in the whole nine yards, okay, great. But they got this like 50-50 half-ass shit. And they're making new parts that are a replacement for old parts. Why don't you just keep making the old fucking parts? Doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know. Probably the same reason you can't buy XO9 speed anymore.
Yeah, you should be able to.
And, I mean, I do have to be a little bit of a dick to you right now on the show just so Troy doesn't give me a hard time later. But, like, Honda still makes the Accord. No, they don't make a shitbox Accord like they did in 2012 or 13 whenever, like, Honda still makes the Accord. SRAM still makes GX. Sorry, your old poor person bike isn't UDH. Buy a new bike. Fuck you. I don't know.
It's just so weird to me that they've built arguably the best product line ever, which is GX.
And they still make it.
And then they're going to not call it GX anymore.
No, Kenny, they still make fucking GX 12-speed mountain bike parts.
Yeah, well, if they have their way, some board member is going to call it the G470.
It'd be a GX 470. So, oh wait, that's a car.
I think it's a car.
Can we just keep going? Kenny, what have you done this week?
Besides slam Izzy Vodka and get mad about having to import 5 new SKUs.
Yeah, I will say, it's nothing like Shimano. Shimano has A through G revisions of every single electronic part they've ever made. And they change the UPC every time.
And isn't it really cool when you're like, oh shit, I'm trying to find a 52-36 chainring combo for this bike, and I found the 52, and heaven forbid on Shimano's goddamn website, you know, you go to QBP, you're looking for a wheel set, and it's sold as individuals. When you're on the front wheel, it's like products you may like, and it's the fucking rear wheel that matches it. There might even be three, because there's like an HG, a Microspine, and an XD. And you're like, goddamn, QBP, y'all are making this easy. I'm about to sell some wheels. I'll pay that $7 flat rate shipping for oversized items. Fucking get in my cart. And then you go to Shimano, and you're like, well, I found the ZF52, but I can only find the Z7 or ZY36, so the clocking's going to be wrong, so I can't find the chainrings for this old Ultegra 70 or 60... 600 or not that old, but you know, 6800 Ultegra chain rings. Let me spend 45 minutes finding a pair of chain rings.
Oh, Shimano, like, has the absolute worst B2B and the worst part numbers ever. Their B2B has gotten a tiny bit better, but most of the shit's still broken on it.
Oh, it's better as in, like, you don't have to dig a hole to find the bar that they fucking stepped over.
Yeah, it's not great. You know, it still says, you know how they're, like, they still haven't figured out, you know, how to make it not show sales tax as an example, or shipping. They're like, oh yeah, sometimes it just says that, but ignore it. Like, what the fuck?
Here's the thing. Like, you go, you know, they're like, oh, they were repaving a road and they found an old, like, Roman road that was under like 19 layers of pavement. That's how low the bar is for Shimano to get better.
It's pretty
okay.
Low.
Okay, so since we're on a fucking tear, and the whole show is off the rails, we've got 19 tabs of new shit open. We talked about what is the biggest shortcoming of SRAM. Like, what was their biggest blunder?
And
I said, not better product support for 11-speed SRAM Red ETAP.
Yeah, I do remember this conversation a couple shows ago.
Now, Shimano.
What's their biggest blunder?
Are
you
hold
asking
on.
Me? Because that's
we don't
this
need,
is a harder question.
A show about
this
that.
Is a harder question than the no. SRAM one, because there's so many to choose from.
I'm going to give you the elephant in the room reason, and then I'm going to give you a much more nuanced thing. Obviously, it's the crank sets that failed. Like, your cranks just can't fall apart. So don't do that, but they did. The biggest shortcoming of Shimano is, and this is all related to, they have 14 different versions of iSpec. And along with that, they make two of everything. Like, so if you have an iSpec E or iSpec EV, okay, there's an iSpec EV shifter and a clamp shifter. Could you not figure out how to just bolt a fucking clamp on that shifter? Really? Really?
It is pretty crazy.
The people that came up with the Supra and the Skyline couldn't give me one shifter skew to rule them all?
I mean, they're different people in the same country.
Look around. Ask someone, hey, should I change this every 2 years? Fuck no. Hey, should I maybe make one skew instead of two? And if you need the part, you use it. And if you don't need the part, you set it to the side. Fuck no. Make two skews.
The,
put it in a
on
giant
the
cardboard
flip
box.
Side of that, Saint Brakes have stayed
hold on,
the same
hold on.
For 20 years.
Make sure that you print the box gray. Ooh, but you changed it. So change the color of the box just a little bit. Ooh, it's really old. Put it in brown. Don't waste the ink on it. Why do I need a shiny fucking black box for a shifter? I don't. You know what I need? I need a brown box that says XT 12 speed on the side in some big ass letters. I don't need one box that has 17 different check marks on it that has one little check on there. And here I am looking on a shelf and I've got my fucking binoculars out trying to figure out what this fucking thing is.
I don't know if our listeners' eyes have ever glazed over as much when we're actually talking about bike stuff and not something just random like fucking elk or guns.
I don't know. I think it's fun for people to peek behind the curtain of the shit we deal with on a day-to-day basis running a bike shop.
Yeah, like,
I think that's a little more than a peek, though. I think they've gotten, like, you think...
I mean, it's full frontal right now.
You've lit the curtain on fire.
Anyways, so, Kenny, what have you been doing?
I took a family trip down to St. George, like we do every year. So, brought the bicycle. I rode the bicycle a whole bunch. It was mostly with nephews, so we were kind of going chill. They're around 10 years old. So they're not full-blown rippers yet, but they're getting a lot better. It's fun to see them get faster and more confident every year. So we did a lot of like bear claw poppy laps, which is like it's an easy climb up albeit slightly long, and then just kind of choose your own adventure down. It's just a fun. It's like a, I don't know, we'll call it a 2% grade, and you can like go pretty fast, and there's all kinds of cool little offshoots and pick your own lines and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, we rode that one a bunch. And what else did we ride? We rode Little Creek, which is kind of like a guacamole or a gooseberry, real slate rocky. It's out in the middle of nowhere. I talked about riding it on some previous show, but super fun spot. Nobody out there. What else did we do? We rode some moto. I brought the Husky places I hadn't brought it before, which is pretty cool. Got to go up some rowdy stuff. What else did we ride? I rode another new place. St. George is building all kinds of new trails. I'm going to get the name of this trail system.
Hey, Kenny.
Wrong. Yes.
I found XO1 chains in stock for you.
Well, yeah, if I want to make zero margin and buy them from Quality because they have 100,000 of them left, like, yeah, it's fine, but they're discontinued. They're no longer on SRAM. JNB says, yo, last shipment, these are discontinued because they're discontinued. Yeah, if you're trying to cheer me up, it's not going to work.
I didn't have pricing turned on. I didn't realize how bad the price was.
Oh, my
was
God. If you buy XO1 chains from Quality Bike, you're going to go out of business as a bike shop.
So New Trail in St. George.
New Trails in St. George. They are – we usually stay at a place called The Ledges, which is kind of a golfy, resorty place. It's near Snow Canyon off Highway 18, I believe. And it's up on that little mesa area over there. So I'll have to remember the name of that place. But they're building tons of trails out there. We explored some kind of chill greens and blues out there. But apparently there's some more rowdy stuff out there, which is really freaking cool. So they're building a whole bunch of new trails. So St. George is a really neat place. You guys are allowed to go out there, I guess. Just not just
us or everyone.
I mean,
listening.
Everybody listening, just not when I'm there. Traffic's getting pretty gnarly going from Salt Lake City to St. George. But yeah. I think that was pretty much it. I rode my bike a whole bunch. I am currently at a crossroads with my suspension. I'm going to try to get my EXT worked on and revalved. So I'll let you know if that is successful. And if not, that fork at least will go away. And I'll probably get either a new Fox 38 with holes in it or the new Zeb. So there you go.
I was just looking at the new Zeb with the butter wagon. Which we can get to in a minute, but it sounds like instead of getting a marketing person to make the name, they just ask like the most autistic engineer on the crew. They're like, hey, what should we call this thing that's like the buttercup? But like, what have you been calling it? And they're like, butter wagon.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks cool. I mean, I don't mind the name. I think the name's kind of funny, but like it doesn't sound like, like the marketing crew maybe wasn't as involved on that one as much as the other ones.
I don't know. I feel like if I was going to redesign all of SRAM stuff, I could do it in 3 minutes and do a better job than they did. As far as marketing and like product alignment and all that shit. I mean, shit. Just call it good, better, best. And then you're fucking done. Everyone meeting adjourned. Everyone fucking go home early. But instead, we have this splintered, ridiculous landscape of shit.
It just happens.
I don't like it.
Is that your week?
That's my week.
Anything else?
That's it. I'll probably think of something
else. All right. My week has been pretty normal for me. I haven't ridden my bike yet because my left hand that I had surgery on, it's still just like, I mean, it's getting better every day, but, you know, I can hold about 30 pounds. If I like lift something up, that's about how much grip strength I have. And, you know, I don't want to like put it on a handlebar and go bang it around in the woods or anything. So, yeah, I'm not really able to ride. Like I could, I don't know, go down a gravel road or something, but I couldn't really do a real bike ride just yet. But I've been doing my usual shit. I did some beaver trapping this week, caught a couple of beavers. One was pretty big. It was 47 pounds. And then the one I caught last night had this big scar on its back, which is normal for this time of year because, you know, just a quick little beaver biology lesson for you. When they're about 2 years old, their parents will kick them out of the territory to go and find their own spot. And it can get pretty violent. Like, in the springtime, beavers are, like, fucking mean to each other. Like, they fight. Just straight up just fight with each other. Like, the parents will kill a young, like one of the ones they're trying to kick out, like if they don't leave, they will just straight up just unalive.
Just murk a fool.
Yeah, they will. And this one had this huge scar on its back. And just based on the size, that's probably you know, it was probably about 2 years old. And when I skinned it, it had a broken back. Like when it got into whatever fight it got into, the bones of its vertebrae were literally like broken and like deformed. So like this thing had just been fucked up and had started to like heal over and stuff. Like it wasn't fresh, but it was pretty fucking wild. Like the kind of shit that they do to each other.
Like that beaver got the old 300 kick off the top of the beaver dam.
Yeah, it looked like it. I mean, it really like it looked like something could have. I mean, the scar was definitely from another animal, but like the back, like I don't know, maybe it like chewed through a tree that fell on it or something. But yeah, it was like a violent looking injury. Like it was not something. It was definitely like short of, so like the very first elk I ever harvested had a compound fracture in its leg that was starting to heal over. Like short of that, that's like the worst injury I've ever seen in an animal that I've, that's just been like out walking around. So that was pretty wild. Turkey season starts on Saturday, so hopefully by the time everyone listens to this show, I'll have had some good turkey stories to tell. So that's what you all get to look forward to for the next couple of weeks. But that's really it for me. We want to do new shit? We got a bunch of new shit.
Yeah, there's some rowdy stuff to talk about.
You guys start out.
Should we do the rowdiest one first?
No. Let's rapid fire a few things. Moots and White Industries teamed up to make a $1,350 titanium crank.
God, I've got so many toilet paper tabs open. Hang on.
You know, with that crank, it says you could, it's available with a 29 or a 30 millimeter spindle. Why didn't they just do 29?
Well, I think because they know White Industries some people are dumb enough to run a 30.
They are. So Moots made that. There's not really much to add to it, but you can
it's
buy.
It's nice. It's light. It's cool. It's expensive as fuck.
Yeah. You could also just buy like a SRAM carbon crank and keep. You could buy that and a bunch of Big Macs.
What's the weight difference between that titanium crank and a SRAM, like the lightest SRAM carbon crank you can get?
Let me see if I can find that weight without it. They are probably lighter.
They meaning the titanium ones?
No. The SRAM XX SL crank is 475 grams, including the chain ring. So, yeah.
What's the weight of the titanium one?
420.
Without a chain ring?
Yeah.
Oh, and that's also 420 in the 165 millimeter length.
This is 175 with a 34 tooth chain ring.
So we're going to say they're similar, but the SRAM one's probably a little bit lighter.
And $600. So you would have $750. I'm sorry, $605. So you'd have $700 and
you'd be halfway on like onto like a new ultralight wheel set.
Or you could buy probably...
It's nearly 1,000 chicken nuggets.
Yeah, you could buy a lot of shit. I mean... quart of ice cream from Safeway is $4 when it's on sale, $5 when it's not. So you could get, you know, 100 quarts of ice cream.
Americans will do anything to not use the metric system.
Yep. So to keep going, I just don't think that it's that interesting to me. Crank Brothers Stamp Evo flat pedal is essentially Crank Brothers is going to make a pedal that is very similar in size and style to the Pedaling Innovations pedals. And they come in two sizes. They call them small and large. They should call them extra large and even bigger. But anyways, they are maybe a little bit pricey, but they're $200 and they seem fine. If you weren't riding a lot of technical single track where you were afraid of pedal strikes because a larger pedal just has to hit more shit because it sticks out more, then that would be pretty cool option. And what's nice is Pedaling Innovations is consumer direct, so bike shop can stock this. I see nothing wrong with them, and I think they fill a hole in the market that I don't think a lot of people are asking for, but it's a nice option when someone does ask.
Can I say something about flat pedals?
It's confusing how much innovation there is for something that's so simple.
I think there's that. That's pretty valid. I think a lot of people are trying to innovate where there's really not innovations, but whatever. Replaceable pins are the dumbest fucking thing in the world. By the time you need to replace your pins, they're so smashed up and sideways, and the receiving threads are fucked up even at that point. Good luck getting those goddamn things out. Like, just throw your fucking pedals away and go buy new ones.
I'm going to disagree. I think a different way to put it is, hey, just because you have flat pedals doesn't mean you need to ride them until they barely work and then come to the bike shop and expect us to revive your, you know, 19-year-old cat with a UTI of a pedal.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. I like that. But really, what I would recommend is just go buy $60 composite pedals, ride them for a season or two, and fucking throw them away and just buy new ones.
Hold on, Kenny. Don't throw them away. Take them off your bike. Leave them beside
put them in a basket and drop them off at the fire station. That's fine. You can do that.
Kenny.
Put them in the baby box at the fire station.
I was going to say, maybe leave them at a trailhead with a little note like, I got new pedals. Hope this makes someone's day. Because there's going to be someone that's riding around on like half of the plastic pedal that came on a Rip Rock or a Marlin. Sure. And they're going to be like, holy shit, this is sweet.
Yeah, there you go.
So, all right. Next thing we're going to rapid fire. Canyon's new Endurace is a super fast race bike. It's not just an endurance bike. And it's already won some of the spring classics. And I just wanted to talk about that because my crush on Matthew Vanderpool can't get any stronger. And yeah, this bike is pretty cool.
Another kind of cool bike, new BMC two-stroke, just their updated hardtail. Looks like a cool hardtail. They just updated the geometry. Looks nice. Good colors.
Makes that one stroke look like a piece of shit.
Totally.
So, other rapid-fire thing. Cannondale brought back the Bad Habit, and the paint job on the release bike is hot as shit.
They did like a retro paint job. That is pretty cool.
That bike is hot. I don't want this to sound mean, like I don't really care about the rest of it. I'm not a Cannondale dealer. And
what wheel size is that? Is that mullet?
Probably. I saw the picture and was like, I just want to talk about it because it looks pretty. And you can buy that frame set. It comes with a Vivid. You can put a water bottle on top of the swap box. You can put your little tool storage roll thing on the bolts above the shock. It's hot as shit.
I haven't seen yet where they say what the wheel size is here.
Well, it's mullet. You can tell by the way that it is when you look at it. 160 fork mixed wheels and up-to-date geometry. So,
okay.
Bikes that I don't care about, but I'm going to mention. Otso released the Hoot. I can't remember.
Hoot.
And they released...
Is the Hootie an Esker?
No, Hoot. There was the Hoot Tie, so Hootie. And now there's the Hoot Steel. So the Hoot Steel, it is pretty fine. If you want a bike that is almost an Esker but can't go single speed, this is probably fine. And I say it like that because it doesn't have sliding dropouts. So steel bikes without sliding dropouts are kind of silly to me. But anyways,
now about this Kona Unity.
We're not getting that. I was going to talk about that one in depth. This is rapid fire time.
Okay.
Surly released the Sorceress 140 hardtail. And
oh, I have something to say about that. Where the fuck?
I thought we talked about that on our previous show. Maybe we didn't.
No. Nope.
What the AI fuck are these pictures about with the dude where they've like blurred out his actual torso and put a fucking cape on him? I mean, some of the photos look real. But some of the other ones just look abso-fucking-lutely so computer-generated, it's so dumb.
No,
man.
He
looks like he's wearing a fucking squirrel suit, like a flying squirrel suit where people like, you know, like the Red Bull people like jump off of...
No, wingsuit?
Yeah, wingsuit.
Okay,
fly through a canyon before they open their parachute. Like, that's what this dude looks like, and it's the worst Photoshop AI-generated bullshit that I've ever seen in a bike ad.
Yeah. It is the world we live in these days, so...
Yeah, fuck that shit.
Yeah. Let's see.
That bike makes me surly.
Jesus, fuck. It's a single-speedable UDH thing, and of course, Surly had to call it something dumb, so it's the duh dropout system. Oh, we rearranged the letters of UDH, and it spells duh, because you can run at UDH, or you can put these special little chips in that I'm going to get high and lose, and it'll be single-speed. Sorry. Now, getting into things that we actually care about a little bit. Let's see. Reserve launched new 30mm XC wheels, which is pretty cool.
1,304 grams for the pair.
Yeah. If you want carbon spokes and want to spend a bunch of money, that's what you get. So, that's something. I don't know how I feel about it, because
That's if you want the ultralight ones, they come with the DT Swiss 180 hub, it looks like.
The 180 hub and the carbon spokes. And just kind of expensive. $2,500. I think I would buy birds before I bought those.
Yeah, definitely.
But at least they updated it. It's not 28 internal anymore. And that, how much does the cheaper wheel set weigh? 1,500 grams for $1,600. That's not bad. And I will say the reserve rims have always been very shallow. So I think that they're going to ride pretty well. Kenny, you got any thoughts there?
I think they're great. I think Specialized makes a whole bunch of great wheels. I think Reserve makes a whole ton of great wheels. I think they're two of the best just all-rounder wheels. Like, you can kind of just buy anything in their lineup. It's going to be pretty darn good.
If you buy for your category within your budget, it's probably an upgrade.
It's going to be really good. And they run industry standard stuff for the most part. Even those spokes are becoming like pretty industry standard, those carbon ones. It's the same spokes that are used on the Specialized and probably some other stuff.
So wheels we probably don't care about. DT Swiss updated all their carbon wheels, and they're still really deep. And
yeah,
they're
probably really deep and really expensive.
Yeah, I don't know who DT Swiss sells wheels to other than bike brands like
Pivot,
Canyon.
Pivot uses a bunch of them.
IT, Pivot.
I think maybe if we lived in Europe, DT would make more sense for wheel sets because they'd be cheaper. That's just my guess.
Maybe. Okay. Then something I want to talk about, and it's not just because I'm a Kona dealer, it's because I knew this bike was coming for a long time. I knew this bike was coming before I was a Kona dealer because I found it online. Because a bike shop accidentally posted it too soon, and it ended up on Reddit, and I saw it, and I was completely enamored with it. It's the Kona Unity, and it is a bikepacking-specific 29+, 27.5+ bike. And it's not suspension corrected, so you get a really big front triangle, and it has a head tube where you can bolt a rack to it, so you can actually carry stuff without 19 different Volet straps and $300 in accessories from other brands to actually strap like a sleep system to your handlebar and crush your brake lines and have your weight way up high by your handlebars.
Oh, yeah. Trek did, what was the thing that Trek made that had a front rack like that?
It was the 1120.
Yeah.
And that bike fizzled out too. But, you know, I don't know that this bike's going to be around. I have no info. I don't know that this bike's going to be around for forever. Maybe it will be. Maybe it won't be. This might be something that, no pun intended, they need to sell X number of units and it might kind of fizzle away and it might gain traction and stick around, but we have two in a box, and I really want to get one built and see it in person because it looks really...
The front triangle is gigantic.
Yeah, like if you got an extra large in one of these, like it looks like I could put a full-size frame bag in it and still use the seat tube water bottle boss.
Like if you had a friend that was very small, they could like curl up in a ball and get in your front
triangle. They could hold on to that front rack. They could like sit back here and put their feet up on the front rack and then like hold your thighs with their hands, somehow their ass meat would get ground up by the chain ring.
I think you could put like a child seat in there.
Probably.
You could. Yeah. So I think it's a cool looking bike. I think the retail price is pretty acceptable. Couple things I'm really excited about. Again, don't know anything, but like, hey, look, that looks just like other Kona dropouts, but this one is UDH compatible. That's pretty cool. They haven't done that before. Oh, look, it runs a color match painted fork with bosses and a regular ass through axle, not like a Surly where you have to have two tools and like drop a bolt on the ground. I don't know. I think this bike slaps and I can't wait to I'll put one together. I'll weigh it and I'll report back next week.
I'm guessing 32 pounds.
I'm guessing 30. I'm going to go 33 and a third.
I'm just going to say 32. It's like Price is Right. Closest without going over.
I'll just lie to you about what it weighs then. We've got some RockShox stuff and some e-bike stuff. What do you want to talk about next, Kenny?
Let's talk about the e-bike stuff.
Can I go first? Because I think this is like leads into e-bike stuff.
Sure.
There's a new company called Upway. Well, I don't know how new they are, but like they're basically a reseller. They're kind of like the Pros Closet.
They're the Pros Closet of e-bikes.
Yeah, but then it also says at the end of this article they're doing not e-bikes as well, so there you go. Apparently they do like a full, whatever, they say a 50-point inspection. They'll replace all the worn-out normal bike parts, and then They'll also, let's see, they'll revamp or replace batteries and sensors. So that sounds pretty cool. I mean, that's a cool way to keep e-bikes out of the dump, I guess. Like, you know, you're not...
I'm going to have a healthy dose of skepticism here. They're not redoing fucking batteries. Give me a break. I mean, that would be such a huge liability, and you're not even able to do that on any of these mainstream batteries anyway. So I don't know what the fuck that actually means. That just like makes somebody feel good. They're not reviving some bricked battery.
They're probably buying a new battery from the manufacturer and putting it
in. I mean, maybe. And
they say that they're very picky about the bikes that they will purchase. So that's what I'm guessing is that it has to be something that they can get replacement parts for. And, you know, I'm just going to say, like, if they really do have expert mechanics doing all of this stuff and doing it, you know, like to expert mechanic standards, that's really cool. But I'm not going to hold my breath on that because I know how few and far between expert mechanics are. So, yeah, I mean, if they're actually doing all that stuff, it sounds like a pretty cool thing. And they have like, you know, like a money back, let's see, what do they have? A 14-day money back guarantee if you don't like it. Let's see, what else do they have? A 1-year warranty. And then you can get an extended warranty for 3 extra years that covers accidental damage, falls, or crashes. Which, I don't know, that sounds like something that would be a huge pain in the ass to deal with. But again, maybe it's good, maybe it sucks. Time will tell. But yeah, get into the other e-bike stuff now.
Jesus Christ. I'm looking at what some of their prices are, and holy shit. A 2022 Turbo Conevo SL Comp, $5,150. Don't see that moving, but what do I know? Anyways, let's move on.
So the big piece of news here is the DJI Avionox motor, the new one, the M2. And I'm not even, we actually talked about it pre-show. There's a lot of insider stuff I'm not going to talk about. But basically, the gist of it is it makes 1,500 boost and 1,300 watts on regular. And of course, you can tune it down and whatever. So what we really have here is we clearly are at a crossroads where we've got to figure out if we want to legislate maximum power. Because maybe we've just decided that it doesn't matter. Maybe 20 mile an hour speed limit is all that matters. And you can do whatever the fuck you want up to 20 miles an hour. If you want to have 1,000 horsepower on your e-bike up to 20 miles an hour, maybe we just allow that. I don't know the answer, but we're clearly going to have to figure that out because nobody is abiding by the rules anymore. DJI didn't do it before. They're clearly not doing it on Gen 2, which is this motor. And Specialized isn't doing it, and a whole bunch of other people are going to start breaking the kind of unwritten 750-watt max thing. I thought it was written. I guess it's unwritten. Regardless, we're going to have to make a decision on what we're doing. And the moral of the story here is a whole bunch of, I'm going to call them tier 2 manufacturers, bougie manufacturers, I don't know. A whole bunch of them are running this motor. And it's going to be a disruptor, and something's going to come of this. I think this is going to be one of the biggest things to happen to the e-bike industry in a really, really long time. And that's really it, because I think it's probably a really good motor. It looks like a really good system. The display is nice. It's got a whole bunch of features. The app looks really good. It's got no belts in it. Basically, everything about it on paper, at least in the few reviews I've read, are saying that it's amazing. And I think a whole bunch of people are going to have to catch up. And while that's all happening and people that want to catch up, like the Specialized of the world, they're going to have to figure out, do we just break the rules in the same way they did? Or does Specialized, for example, there's so many situations that could happen. Does Specialized lobby all the lawmakers and say, because they're getting their ass beat, do they say they want to draw a line in the sand now on max power? I don't know. I mean, I've got a lot of thoughts on this. But either way, it's out. The elephant's in the room. We're going to have to figure out what we're going to do as an industry. And I don't know what the answers are anymore.
And I've seen it, like, because a couple of just municipalities around Colorado are starting to crack down on the e-motorcycles. I've seen, you know, like, various, like, I just read one from Buena Vista, which is north of Salida, 20 minutes north of Salida. They had the sheriff's office put an article out about a you know, this is, you know, we're going to crack down on these. And they describe the difference between an e-bike and the different classes of e-bike and these e-motorcycles. And they do mention that for an e-bike, they are required to have a tag on them that lists their wattage and their top speed.
But see, that's the problem here. When they say stuff like that, even wattage is not defined correctly. What they'll say is things like average or nominal, which is a nonsense thing. Somebody needs to, and here's the thing. If we decide as a society, as a federal government, whatever, if we decide that the 20 mile an hour thing and no throttle is all we care about, okay, great. Let's go down that road. But clearly, I think we need more definitions. I mean, this has been talked about to death by everybody, but clearly we need more definitions.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's out. It's happened. And a whole bunch of manufacturers are going to have it. And we're going to see how many people are going to piss off. Maybe it's fine. I don't know. I truly don't know. I mean, this thing makes double the fucking power of the best e-bikes of last year. That's like pretty crazy. And I mean, not only is it is from a technology standpoint, it's pretty impressive. We probably could have gotten there in previous years, maybe not be reliable, but like you can just reprogram the controller. Boom, it's done. It makes a bunch of power. It's not like a complicated thing. But can the rest of it hold up? And now, like we talked about on previous shows, holy crap. Not only is this a legal quagmire, but holy shit, bicycle components here, guys. We have bicycle components on these things. You want to put 1500 watts continuously through a 12-speed mountain bike drivetrain?
No.
Fuck
no, Kenny. Not 1500 watts, 16 to 2,500 watts.
Yeah, that's true, because you're going to be pedaling it as well. So humongous amounts of power through it. We're going to be shredding wheels and chains and chain rings and holy crap, people. It's not going to work. It's just not going to work. We got to either tone these things back down or we're going to have to beef up all the other components, assuming that this becomes legal. So I don't know. We're in a weird place right now.
What did I say a while back? We're going to end up with, let me see if I can run through this quickly, disc brake, track wheel, 1/8 cog, and all the coasting is done. The coasting and shifting is done in the motor. That's what I perceive.
I could see that being a thing. I could totally see that.
What does that remind you of, Kenny?
A motorcycle? And let me be clear. I love all this stuff. I love tech. I love e-motos. I love gas motos. I love e-bikes as they were. And I'm sure if I rode one of these MS2 motors, I'd freaking love that bike too. But the fact of the matter is, we're blurring the lines too much. We're going to piss off a whole bunch of people, and we're going to get e-bikes taken away from all trails eventually if we keep going down this road. So somebody has to draw a damn line in the sand, or we're going to get ourselves in trouble.
You heard it here first.
Technology always outpaces legislation.
Yeah. Anyway, right. So that's it. I think we talked about that enough, and we did it in a... hopefully a good way. It didn't throw too many other
rant-free
brands
way
under the bus or anything, but there's a lot of scared people right now. There's a lot of scared brands out there.
Well, and a quote from, I just was looking at like a Bike Rumor article about all of the companies that are adopting that motor, and one writer's quote was quoted as saying, it almost feels illegal.
Yeah, I think that's how YT is maybe literally marketing it, is it feels illegal. Yeah.
All right, well... we want to talk about suspension?
Yeah, let's do it.
We can start with Fox. They updated their trail forks to the new Grip X damper.
Yep.
So
that old one was garbage.
You have like three choices now. You have the SL, the X, and the X2. That's good that you have like the three choices now and you don't have to like sort through too much shit.
I will say for the most part, Fox does a reasonable job of not having like too many things and confusing the public and having all kinds of fancy names. They do have stuff like GlideCore or whatever they're calling their air spring, but they don't really call it out that much unless you dig into the techie stuff. SRAM, however, if they can slap a piece of anodizing or a sticker or something on the side of that fork, they are going to fucking do it.
Well, the new SRAM suspension. Let's see, they did forks and shocks for SRAM. Let me find the article real quick. Yeah, they now have the Butter Wagon tech on new Lyric and Zeb forks with linear XL air springs. And I haven't read all the way into the details yet.
Does Butter Wagon mean that it has buttercups plus the little dimply things? And that both together is a butter. Buttercups and butter something equal Butter Wagon?
I think so.
What are the butter dimples called? Butter dimples?
I think that's just part of the Butter Wagon system.
I don't like any of this. I like the tech. I hope I make it very clear that I don't like marketing departments, because that's the vibe I get a lot.
They have adjustable bottom-out controls, so you can customize your in-stroke support with a tool independently of the main air spring.
I want my bottom-out to be harsh, so I know it happened. So I want some shit to sound like it broke.
Does that mean that we no longer are doing volume spacers, so now you have bottom-out control with a tool instead of using volume spacers?
I think it's different, I'm guessing. I didn't sit in on this tech article, so I'm sure some people at SRAM are going to be really angry at me. So I don't know. But I'm guessing volume spacers are going to be more like progressivity or how linear is your air spring, whereas the bottom-out stuff really only affects the bottom part of the travel.
The updated forks incorporate Butter Wagon tech, an internal oil distribution system with divots.
So the dimples are the wagon.
Okay.
Because the butter gets on the wagon and gets moved around better.
Okay.
Can you have butter wagon with butter cups?
They capture and redistribute the high-density Maxima lower leg oil to maintain bushing lubrication.
So does it have a sticker on that fork that says Butter Wagon and Butter Cup?
I hope it says Butter Wagon on it somewhere. I don't know.
God, I feel like SRAM products are going to start looking like someone's last page of their yearbook that's been signed by everybody. Just all the damn names of patents and shit that they have on there.
All right.
But it's probably going to be really good. So I like to make fun of it. I hate marketing departments. But I'd really like to try the new Zeb. It's clearly gotten better and better every iteration. So it sounds like a couple articles I've read that have been head-to-head on the new 38 versus the Zeb. They seem to like them both pretty equally. And they say they're both pretty awesome. So that's pretty cool. We're making progress in the old suspension world, and it keeps getting better and better.
I just want a line of bib shorts, or I guess it would be baggy shorts now, since no one wears normal spandex anymore. Just some that say Butter Wagon across the ass.
Like those booty shorts that said juicy and stuff?
Yeah. I just want shorts that say Butter Wagon. I won't even ride, I don't even have to ride one of these forks. I just want shorts that say Butter Wagon on my ass, because that's kind of what it is now.
I will say, I talked a lot of smack on SRAM on this show, and they deserved every bit of it. But, one thing I like about the new Zeb is that I can visually tell it apart pretty easily, because it's got that big old, arch plastic guard thingy. And I like that kind of stuff. I want it to look somewhat different, so I can actually tell what generation is what. That's just one of those little things that I think is actually pretty nice, because it was getting a little out of control. The first two or three generations of Zeb, there were other generations and some had buttercups and some didn't. It's very fucking confusing and different dampers and shit, but they look the same. So unless you put in the serial number on some special app and it says, oh, that's the A1.2 revision, then you would have no idea what it actually is. And that bothers me.
There's never a 0.2.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, well, actually, the charger damper is 3.2 now.
See?
He was talking about a review.
I know. Product I was making
revision,
fun of the of A1, A2, A3, B1, B2,
you mean like
B3.
The Lyric E1, which is this one?
Yep. We're on the old E revision, which it's fine. I'm glad that they have a generation and they call it a different thing. But it is nice when you can look at something and it's pretty clear what year or generation it is. But the Zeb's I don't fucking know.
I mean, it is nice they put that number on the fork and you just put it into the whatever the website and it tells you what it is.
Yeah, it is cool. It's a good app.
I ran into something I hadn't seen in a while and I felt really proud of myself. It was like, man, this fork doesn't lock out. And I was like, okay. They're like, there's no serial number on it. I'm like, oh, it's motion control. Just dump more oil in it. I mean, not
put
really.
Put more oil in it until it locks out too much.
No, I mean, when you look up the, knowing it was motion control, we looked up a chart, and the chart gave us an oil height before the damper was installed, so it wasn't that bad. But it was like, no, dude, it's just a motion. If it does, if it's old enough that I have a serial number, it's motion control.
You know what the cheat is that I always use on those? And I'm sure we talked about it 10 years ago on one of our shows. It's probably not the right way to do it. So if someone at SRAM's upset, I don't really care. All you do is, I like those old motion control ones too. They're pretty easy to work on. You can like swap out dampers, do all kinds of cool shit. Anyway, if you're ever in doubt, you need to do a quick lockout job on this thing. Just lock the damper out with the damper like pulled out of the fork. Lock it out. Just push the damper down in until it hydrolocks with the oil. And you want that to be like 5 millimeters before the threads hit. And boom, yep. Proper oil level.
Worked.
Worked great. We've done a few of those recently actually at the shop.
And they did the Linear XL air spring to their rear shocks also. To the Super Deluxe and Vivid Air.
God, there's too many goddamn marketing names.
I mean, it essentially has like a magnet or big can, and you just move an O-ring to change the air volume, it looks like.
Oh, yeah. That's
I mean, it's cool. Really slick.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
And I say that, I didn't get to attend the webinar either. It was, it's not something that someone else at my shop watched it, and it looks cool.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty simple.
And we don't really sell suspension, so... I don't know. When one comes in, I'll punch it into trailhead and I'll go learn what I need to do.
That is the nice thing about SRAM is you can just go to trailhead and then it's like, here's the documents you need to work on this. Here's how it works. And even if you don't, if you know how to work on suspension and read instructions, you can pretty much get through most of the stuff they have unless it needs like a tool that you don't have.
Which is pretty uncommon. It's not like Fox. You're like, oh, fuck, we need to sell a new tool. Let's build new forks. Let's redesign the damper so we can sell tools.
Pretty much.
God, the shock in this marketing stuff, I don't know where they got it, but it's obviously never had any oil in it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Or it's been through an ultrasonic cleaner.
Yeah, they just dropped it in the ultrasonic cleaner.
That thing is so dry, fresh. Yeah, it's dry. It's going in dry. Bite the pillow. Bite the buttercup.
God. Do we want to do our one listener question?
Yeah, let's go. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah, this is from Rob, and this is another...
Wait, I just want you to know this, Rob. I'm not going to say it on the show, but there is a doctor in town with your last name, and sometimes, to be silly, I call him Dr. So-and-so when he walks in the shop, and he looks very uncomfortable. He's like, I'm not a doctor here. And I'm like, yes, you're Dr. So-and-so, and it's kind of a running joke. So just listen to episode 228 and wanted to weigh in with the weight of the fullest power e-bike. My AmFlow PL Carbon Pro, size large, totally stock, except for Continental 2.6 Argatol Trail front, 2.4 Cryptotal downhill rear, and a Fox long front fender, no pedals, 43 pounds, 13 ounces, weighed with a Park Tool Haynes scale. Is a very light bike and a near copy of a third gen.
Yep, they're very popular.
That's nice. I don't know how much my e-bike weighs, but it's definitely more than 43 pounds.
It's probably 53 pounds.
Yeah, probably. At least.
I truly don't know how much it really matters at the end of the day on how much your bike weighs / e-bike, especially an e-bike. I don't know yet. The jury's out on that. We'll figure it out. I just don't know if lighter is necessarily better. Especially on a full power one. Yeah. Don't know yet.
We'll find out.
But yes, it turns out you can build some of these DJI bikes really light.
Sounds cool. If any companies that, make a bike with that motor want me to just...
If you want one of those to be the ultimate hunting rig.
Yeah, the ultimate scouting and hunting fuck around kind of thing, like taking on moto trails.
We ride a medium and an extra large.
Yeah. Hit me up.
It is... Open face Andrea at JRA.net.
That's not it.
None of that is right. That was my full joke.
You can go to our website. There's a contact form. All right. Well, I mean, there's some other new shit, but it's not as interesting. It would just be, it would mess with the flow of the show right now. We should just read patrons.
Yeah, I think we covered a bunch of shit. I think we should shut it down.
God damn, Kenny said the line.
I heard the best patron name ever. It wasn't actually a patron name, but it should probably be a patron name. I'm going to try to remember it.
Oh, hold on. Is this the version of that should be a band name?
No. it's like, can you remember some of the names? Yeah, that have been pretty witty that are like...
Like whore moaning podcast, but it's whore, like Andrea is a
yeah,
a
I mean,
woman.
Like, kind of, but more the, I don't even know what you call them.
Like Candace Cockfit?
Yeah, those, what do you call that? I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
The witty,
but like
a witty name, double entendre situation.
Yeah, Seymour Butts is a good one.
Yeah.
When you look up Donna Summers in the phone book, what would you see? Summer Donna.
Yeah.
What was it?
The name that I saw?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. That's the problem. But it was so good, and I wanted to remember for the show. But now I don't remember.
Okay.
So I'll make a note to try to remember.
All right. So our patrons, starting at $10 a month or more, Kurt, Skunk in Your Trap, Jim the Fucked Up Trike Guy, Burt Reynolds Krusty Stash, Zozo, Eric, Burt Reynolds Mustache, Taper Bore Pro, My Pal Dell, MTB Shenanigans,
Mike Jones,
Cam Irish One, Tennessee Zach, Green Giant, AJ, Leland, We All Know How Matt's Asshole Really Got Chafed, Ride Timex Candace, Cockfit, Patamillan Disco Ball at 14 Australian, and at $20 a month, Andrea's Hormoning Podcast, Scott, Joe, I Want a Mustache Ride from Burt Reynolds, Poop Wrench at $26.06 per month, Rotor All the Way Up in That Caliper, The Full Face Kenny Guide to Erotic Bike Service, Harley at 30, Troy at 31, and Six Pack Outdoors now offering discounted Venezuelan fishing boat tours. It's a blast at 50.
And I remember the name. It's a simple one.
Yeah.
But a good one.
Uh-huh.
Hard and Long.
Oh, yeah, that is good.
It's like it's pretty subtle. Like Long is a very common last name. And Harden could actually truly be a first name. It's like probably one of the best, most subtle ones.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a student that I taught at University of Memphis. I won't give his full name. I don't think it fucking matters, but.
I mean, he's dead.
Just to be nice.
Isn't he dead?
No.
Oh, I thought he died.
No, it was just a student. His first name was Hung.
I thought you had a buddy named Harden that died.
Harding. He's not dead. He had to get a kidney transplant.
Sorry.
But he got one. He's all right now.
All right.
But yeah, that's our show. We ready to shut it down?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Do a death march tomorrow.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening and good night.
Thanks for tuning in to the Just Riding Along show.